But Timothy talked on camera, calling this dirty politics.
I thought we would be better than, especially here in Escambia County. When you look at districts 1 and 5, everybody's able to vote. The only county commissioner race where people have been disenfranchised is district 3.
So this is my district. This is May versus May, brother against brother, with Timothy running against Lumen May. And then Jason Laird has filed as a write-in. There's a lot of background-like question marks. I've said it's scuzzy politics. I don't like it. I think, you know, is it legal? Is it ethical? These are different questions. But it does mean that Republicans do not get to vote in the county commission race for District 3 this year, which we wouldn't normally anyway. I mean, you know, Democrats are going to dominate this anyway. But I did want to ask David Stafford, who is our supervisor of elections. David, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News on your – this is not quite Super Bowl day for you, general election is, but maybe for primaries in Escambia County this is. Just – I'm not going to ask you to weigh in on the facts of the matter. Just maybe tell people – legally, based on all the requirements of the law, Jason Laird is a qualified candidate, and therefore the primary in D3 is closed to Republicans and non-affiliated. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, fair enough. Because you don't make the law, you just follow the law, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's, you know, happens every election cycle here in Escambia County, Santa Rosa County, Okaloosa County, across the state.
Absolutely.
There is going to be a constitutional amendment on the ballot in November to change how the primary process works for statewide candidates and basically everything down to the state legislative races. They'll basically be open primaries. So everybody who qualifies for the contest will be on the first ballot, and then the top two advance to the second ballot. So voters will have an opportunity. And again, that would not impact local races, but
right,
it would impact the ones at the state level.
So let's talk about this for just a second. Something that might not be expected, people, you know, who are used to voting on primary day may show up at their polling place today and find that there's nothing for them to do. Is that right?
That's right. So there's a combination of things. Again, the aforementioned closed primaries, which basically means if you want to vote in the Republican primary for, you know, state legislature, you would have had to have been a registered Republican by the time the books closed 29 days ago. But there's other contests like the county commission districts in districts 1 and 5 and the ECUA and those two districts, that because of the universal primary contest, because there was nobody else that qualified, those are open to all voters. There's not, to be clear, there's not any countywide races in which everybody gets to cast a ballot. The only countywide race that there is the congressional primary. So all Republicans get a chance to vote in that. And then you've got the two House districts that have Republican primaries. And then you have pockets of the county where you have no party affiliation and Democratic registered voters that literally, if they got a ballot, their ballot would be blank because there's no, you know, contest in which they would be qualified to vote.
Right.
And that actually impacts about 50,000 of our 225,000 registered voters.
Oh, wow. So 20% of the registered, you said 250,000 registered and 50,000 are not eligible for a ballot?
225,
okay.
You're right, it's about 20%.
18%, okay. All right, a little more than, actually, 22%. Okay, wow, that's interesting. I didn't know it was so many. But that's just kind of the nature of how this works with the closed and open primaries. I still am actually quite, I'm stunned that districts 1 and 5 for the Republican primary and the county commission are open. That's the rare thing. Not that district 3 is closed, but that the Republican ones are open.
That's been by far the most universal primary contests we've had on the ballot since that, at least that I can recall.
Yeah. So obviously today for an awful lot of people is very different. I know you guys have been taking tremendous precautions even from several months ago when this all began. Help people know what to expect, what kind of safety protocols, and I know, you know, in a minute is not enough time to elaborate on all this, but just kind of help people know what to expect. Like, do they need to wear a mask? You've mentioned before they can bring their own pens, that kind of stuff.
Yep. So the basic things is what you're going to see pretty much everywhere else you go. We're enforcing or practicing social distancing. All of our poll workers will be wearing some kind of face mask or face shield. We're certainly expecting voters to do the same, asking voters and expecting them the same that they would do if they were going to the grocery store or Circle K or, you know, a restaurant or what have you. We will have, when they come to check in, we'll have there's hand sanitizer available for voters. When you sign your name on the electronic signature pad, we actually went out and got some disposable. They're basically medical grade Q-tips, but they work, so you can sign your name and then you just toss it in the trash can, so you're not reusing the electronic stylus. And then we are offering voters to bring their own blue or black ink pen to mark their own ballot. Normally, you know, and there still will be certainly be pens available if you don't bring yours, but we're giving voters the opportunity to bring their own to mark their ballot.
The ballpoint pen is not going to affect the ballot because it's normally a Sharpie type, right?
It's a roller ball, the ones that we use.
Oh, okay.
Are roller balls. Basically, the good thing is you'll know, and really the ones that, you know, colors other than blue or black, particularly like a red or you know, a green color. Sometimes the scanners don't like those because we see those on vote by mail ballots. But when you're scanning your ballot at the polling place before you leave, it'll automatically let you know, let you and the poll worker know if it's not reading a mark. So you'll know that. So,
oh, there's an error message if there's a problem with your ballot at the actual polling place.
That's right. Absolutely. So if you overvote a contest, if you cross out one and you mark the other, it's going to read that as an overvote, and it's going to give the voter an opportunity to get their ballot back.
Is that new?
Go get a replacement. No, that's been in place since the reforms after the 2000 election.
Huh. Now, undervotes, you can still leave a race blank, and that
absolutely
doesn't show up as an error, right?
As long as you vote one contest on the ballot, it could be 15 contests. As long as you vote one contest, it's going to accept that ballot because it's going to look at the logic is that you intended to leave the other contests blank. And you see a lot, you know, particularly when you get into longer ballots and things like judicial retention races or some of the constitutional amendments, people just skip them because they either don't understand them or don't care about them. Which is fine. You know, it's completely up to the voter. The only thing you can't do is the one thing it will note is a completely blank ballot, because then the logic there is that the person does not know how to properly mark their, you know, if they're circling the name versus filling in the oval.
Right. Nobody intends to not vote at all, but
that's right.
But people may well intend to vote.
Well, some people do, actually. You'd be surprised if people that want to get credit for voting, but they, you know, they don't care enough about, or they can't make up their mind, so they'll vote a blank ballot, believe it or not.
That's hard. That is hard. Like, I voted, but there's nothing on there. David, the question that we always get that is 100% we need to handle it every time there's an election day, the person who has gotten an early ballot, an absentee ballot, a ballot by mail, whatever, what do you want that person to do if they have failed to send that in already?
Yeah, great question. Well, they have two options. Number one is if they want that ballot to count. So if they've got a vote-by-mail ballot and it's sitting on their kitchen table and they decide this morning that, now's the time, I want to go ahead and return this ballot. There's only one option for them, and that's to get it in our hands at the elections office before 7 p.m. today. Okay, so that's the scenario one.
That's at Palafox.
You want that ballot to count. At Palafox, we've got a drop box that you can access from the street.
Okay.
So you don't have to come into the office, and we will have that. We'll check that. We'll actually have a person manned it right at 7 o'clock, so we can know when the last ballot was returned. Option two is to actually go to your polling place, your designated polling place on election day, and then you will be able to cancel. We'd prefer you to bring your ballot with you, and so to hand it over to the clerk. Then they'll just write canceled on and then they'll issue your regular ballot. But because we have these electronic poll books that communicate constantly back with the office, we'll know if your ballot has been received back in the office. So if it has not yet been received, you'll be able to cast a regular ballot. If for whatever reason the communication is down or something, they can't determine whether or not your ballot has been received, then you can vote what's called a provisional ballot. But that's only in unusual circumstances. Again, that would have something to do with the communications with our office being down, which doesn't happen regularly. So long as you haven't voted yet, you should be good to go. Again, you're better off if you bring that ballot with you to surrender it. But if you lost or threw it away or never got it, then, you know, we'll know if that ballot has been received yet. And then, of course, then the flip side of that is then if you think you're going to be smart and then go try to return that ballot after you go vote in person, the reverse holds true. If we go to try to enter that ballot in before it's tabulated, it's going to say, no. That David's already voted, so we're not going to count that ballot. So.
Very good. Well, I know it's a lot of work, and I know you need to go. And by the way, I just want to make a note here. Channel 3 also has a guy named David Stafford, the supervisor of elections in Escambia County, on the screen right now. You are real David Stafford in real time, and that guy is a fake on tape.
Is he handsome? He did get his beard.
I don't think he's any more handsome than you are.
if he doesn't have a beard.
Oh, that's right. Well, David, hey, every year we say it, but it's so true. We appreciate the work you do. You do such a good job of running these elections, and you keep us out of the news, which is the good point. Thanks for what you do to serve the community and facilitate our democracy. We appreciate it.
It's all about the people that are working down here, and it's not me. It's all the people that work for me and all the poll workers. So thank them when you go to vote today. Thank the poll workers out there.
Absolutely. Thank you for the time.
All right.